think.
Yeah, why don't we get started, and that way, I think unless we have to approve anything, we don't need a quorum.
So and see. We do have a quorum, so we do have one, just to double check, two, three, four. So we do have a quorum of four.
Okay, great. So let's see. All right, so it is 10:01. And the Board for Private Post-Secondary Education, the Arizona Board for Private Post-Secondary Education, is hereby started at 10:02. Pursuant to ARS 38-431.02, notice is hereby given to the general public and members of the Arizona State Board for Private Post-Secondary Education that the board will hold a board meeting open to the public on the date and time indicated above, which is today. The meeting will be held digitally online. A full meeting agenda and list of applications to be considered can be found online at www.ppsc.az.gov. The board reserves the right to change the order of items on the agenda, except for those matters set for a specific time. The formal hearings and formal interviews are scheduled to be heard during specific time blocks. The board chair, however, reserves the right to call cases in random order. That'll be fun. The board, upon a majority vote of a quorum of the members, may hold an executive session on any of the listed agenda items to obtain legal advice pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A3, Americans with Disabilities Act. People with a disability may request a reasonable accommodation, such as a sign language interpreter, or a copy of this document in an alternative format by contacting Kevin LaMountain at 602-542-5716. And with that, Mr. LaMountain, could you please call the roll?
Dr. Mittman.
Present.
Dr. Mittman is present. Dr. Leck.
Present.
Dr. Leck is present. Mr. Romano. Has Mr. Romano joined? Mr. Romano is absent. Mr. Ball.
Present.
Mr. Ball is present. Mr. Wallace is absent today. Ms. Cardullo.
Present.
Ms. Cardullo is present. Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan.
Seamus. Present.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Keith Blanchard.
I'm present.
Ms. Jacqueline Rome.
Present.
And I'm Kevin LaMountain. We do have a new employee that's on today. Her name is Noelle Vetter. And I know that she is on as well. So all staff is accounted for, and all board members.
Either you froze or... And what's Noelle's new position?
Noelle, new position, and Noelle is going to be doing program specialist, so she'll be taking over some of the responsibilities of reviewing catalogs, reviewing enrollment agreements, and other items as time is a necessity. So she comes to us from the University of Arizona School of Medicine, so we're very excited to have her on. And Noelle, you can say hi if you're on.
Hi, thank you for having me.
No, welcome. All right, great. Are there any conflicts of interest pursuant to Arizona Revised Statute 38-503?
This is Doug. I do have a conflict of interest with Superior Coding Academy, so I'm going to abstain.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Ball. Anyone else? And hearing none, we will move on. Next item on the agenda, as you can see, board minutes. And can we get a motion to, or I'm going to make a motion to accept the board minutes from January 26, 2023. Can I get a second, please?
This is Susan. I'll second.
Oh, nice to see you, Ms. Cardullo. And Mr. LaMountain, do you want to call the vote?
Well, Dr. Mittman.
I'm going to abstain because I was absent.
Dr. Mittman abstains. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano? Mr. Romano is absent. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace is absent. Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. Mr. Monahan, we have three votes. of a quorum of four. Is that acceptable?
And so my understanding is that Member Ball was not here, and that's why he cannot.
Correct.
I was not here. I was here for part of it.
You were here for part?
Yeah.
Just wait until Mr. Romano comes on. We can skip this for now.
Okay. If you're good, we'll skip both of these. Although I think everyone was here for the February 7th meeting. So we could, Dr. Mittman, if you want to go ahead and make that motion for. Sure.
Yeah, I'll move to accept the audio recordings as the official minutes for the emergency board meeting on February 7th, 2023.
Susan, I'll second the amended motion.
Great. Thank you.
Great. We have a motion and a second. Dr. Mittman?
An enthusiastic aye.
Thank you, Dr. Mittman. Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Less enthusiastic aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano absent. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace is absent. Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By the vote of four ayes, two not voting or two absent, that motion passes.
Okay. Let's move on to review and discussion of the executive director's report. Mr.
Dr. Mittman, if it just in terms of timing for today.
I got it. As the words were leaving my mouth. So why don't we skip that, because that will require a motion also, whereas the next agenda item is just a review and discussion with no action required. And so this is, as you can see, review and discussion regarding Aspen University's quarterly report to the board. And representing the institution is Dr. St. Arnaud. And Dr. Arnaud, St. Arnaud, are you here?
I am here.
Well, good. It's nice to see you again.
I do have a short prepared statement.
Go ahead.
That's okay.
Yeah, please.
Good morning, and thank you for inviting Aspen to come before you today in connection with our monthly update under the stipulated agreement. Joining me today is Aspen's VP of Finance, Mr. Michael LaMontagne. He can provide answers to questions the board may have about Aspen's finances. Also in the meeting is our outside counsel, Mr. David Gardner. As you know, there's a lot going on at Aspen right now. We met with this board on February 7 regarding the Distance Education Accrediting Commission's show cause directive, which resulted from concerns relating to the BSN pre-licensure program here in Arizona and issues related to communication, notice, and timely disclosure of information. Following the February 7 meeting, we signed the third amended stipulated agreement with AZPPSE and have timely provided requested information and documents in compliance with the stipulated agreement. We are confident that we can continue to meet our obligations under that agreement. On February 8th, we received a letter from the Department of Education notifying us that Aspen has been moved to heightened cash monitoring 2 due to the show cause directive from DEAC. On February 13, we began a financial aid virtual site visit from the U.S. Department of Education, and we are in the process of diligently answering questions and fulfilling the requests related to that visit. We have timely submitted all of the reporting that has been required of us by our various regulators, including this board. Last week, board staff made a site visit to Aspen. Board staff was on site for a full day and had a full agenda. Board staff met in person with our pre-licensure students who were on location that day, and they met virtually with additional students, many of whom were out in clinical placements and could only meet by Zoom. Board staff also met with our pre-licensure faculty and the institution's departmental leadership, all of whom were made available to answer any questions and provide information as requested by board staff. I want to personally thank you, Mr. LaMontagne, and your staff for coming out and spending time getting to know our school and our staff and directly interacting with our pre-licensure student body. It was the first time anyone from the state of Arizona actually visited us. We were pleased to host you and have an opportunity to provide an in-person perspective on our program and administrative capacity to meet our mission and serve our students. I would like to take a minute and briefly bring you up to date on Aspen's ongoing relationship with the Arizona Board of Nursing. On Tuesday, Mr. LaMontagne was copied on Aspen's response to the investigative report. Late yesterday, Aspen received a supplemental investigative report, We intend to respond to that report later today and will share a copy of that response with Mr. LaMountain. This afternoon, the Board of Nursing has scheduled a special meeting specifically for Aspen. We are looking forward to sharing how Aspen's BSN pre-licensure program is providing instruction and learning opportunities that not only meet but exceed the basic standards of educational practice. While our students' first-time NCLEX pass rate to date have remained below the desired threshold, the Elsevier Evolve HESI predictive data suggests that the NCLEX first-time pass rate for our remaining cohorts is likely to be well over 80%, the 80% threshold. Additionally, to date, the overall NCLEX pass rate for Aspen University graduates is 82%, and 359 of our graduates have been licensed by the Arizona Board. These qualified graduates are helping meet the dire need for nurses in Arizona. Beyond Arizona, two of our graduates have been licensed in Oregon, four in California, one in North Carolina, one in Illinois, and one in Texas. None of our nurses have any disciplinary actions against their licenses. We believe that the remaining students in our teach-out are similarly poised to prove their competency, graduate, and become contributing licensed nurses here in Arizona and beyond. And now I'd like to ask Michael to share with you some information about Aspen's financials, particularly in light of the Department of Education's recent heightened cash monitoring II designation. Michael?
Thank you, Sherry. Good morning, everybody. As Sherry stated, I have a prepared statement for this morning too, specifically in regards to the transfer of Aspen University from the advanced method of payment to the heightened cash monitoring II, also known as HCM2 method of payment. For purposes of this statement, I will refer to Aspen University as Aspen or Aspen University. Aspen Group, which includes Aspen United States University and the corporate parent AGI, will be referred to as the company. Before discussion of the cash management, as a reminder, which is somewhat unique for our institution, Mr. LaMountain, as we discussed last week, Aspen University has a unique business model that offers a monthly payment or MPP. The MPP is a private education loan with a 0% fixed rate of interest and no down payment. Each month, participating students make one payment of $250, $325, or $375, depending on the program, until the program is fully paid. The MPP option at Aspen University has been successful in minimizing our exposure to financial aid. The success of the MPP option is reflected in the year-to-date fiscal period ended January 31st of 2023, which does show that 71% of our students participated in this option, the MPP option, resulting in only 29% of the students are resulting in financial aid. Prior to the transition to HCM2, Aspen did make significant strides during this fiscal year to conserve cash. This was primarily accomplished through two rounds of restructuring that took place in August and November of this fiscal year. The key restructuring facts are as follows. In August of 2022, the first restructuring round resulted in the elimination of 50 general and administrative positions. In November 2022, the second restructuring round resulted in the elimination of 10 G&A positions as well. General and administrative cost savings from these restructuring efforts equate to approximately $1 million per quarter. In addition to these restructuring efforts, the company significantly reduced the marketing spend, which started in quarter two of this fiscal year. We reduced expenditures in this area of $4.5 million in quarter one down to $100,000 spent in the third quarter of this fiscal year. None of the positions eliminated in the restructuring efforts included instructors or other positions that would have had a direct impact on student outcomes or academic operations and support. For reference, prior to the restructuring efforts, the company spent $3.6 million in cash operations in the first quarter of this fiscal year alone. Following the restructure, the company used only $400,000 of cash in operations in the subsequent two quarters, fiscal Q2 and Q3 of this year. It's also important to note that the company's third quarter includes the November and December holiday period, which resulted in seasonally lower than average cash flows for operations. Moving on, regarding the capital expenditures during both fiscal Q2 and Q3 of this fiscal year, the company spent approximately $400,000 on leasehold improvements related to the build-out of pre-licensure locations. In light of the teach-out of the pre-licensure program, leasehold improvements have ceased, and these capital expenditures have been reduced down to zero. As of the end of its fiscal Q3 2023, on January 31st, 2023, the company had unrestricted cash of approximately $1.6 million as compared to $2.3 million at the end of the second quarter. As of the week ended February 10th, this last week, 2023, the company's unrestricted cash balance was up to $2.5 million. While the company's restructuring enabled it to achieve positive cash flow from operations under the advanced payment method, HCM2 at Aspen does require additional adjustments that we recognize to manage the transition to a delayed financial aid payments. We anticipate that the transition to HCM2 will result in a delay of cash receipts of approximately $2.5 million from the effective date, February 8, 2003, up until approximately April of 2023. In late April, we expect a first financial payment of $500,000 representing a cohort of 30-person student subset, which the department requires initially. And then 30 days later, we will expect a full financial aid payment approximately of $2 million. The company is also implementing the following additional steps to maintain adequate operating liquidity during the HCM2 transition. There's two steps here. First, the company offered a one-time opportunity for graduates still making payments under the MPP plan to reduce their outstanding balance by 25% if the balance was paid in full within 30 days of receiving the offer. As of February 20th, 2023, approximately $400,000 had been collected under this program, and we anticipate an additional $600,000 from students that showed interest in this program. As of this morning, I do have an updated number. We were a little over $600,000 collected. Second, the company engaged Lampert Capital Advisors to conduct a thorough search for an accounts receivable lending partner, and due diligence efforts with two interested debt funds were temporarily put on hold pending the Board of Nursing hearing this afternoon. So we're continuing to work and secure a facility with approximately $10 to $15 million that should close before the end of our fiscal year, April 30th, assuming we're able to continue the teach out in our pre-licensure program to its conclusion. That's it for my statements today, and I'm open up for questionings.
Thank you, Michael.
Sure.
This is Doug. I do have a question. Has the DOE indicated how long they're going to keep you on HCM2?
Not at this point. No, we have not heard how long we would be on HCM2.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. St. Arnaud and Ms. De La Montaigne. It would be helpful for me if it sounds like you have a written presentation that you just read from. So it'd be really helpful if you could, if it's all right, to send that to Mr. LaMountain.
Sure.
So that we could, you know, it'd be a little bit easier to follow to be able to see what you just described. The gist of it for me is that you've made significant changes in affecting your cash flow.
Right.
And based on the HCM2, basically you have a 90-day window that you have to address. And so I guess, you know, just sort of I don't know if you have it handy or off the top of your head. So what's the number of cash for what's the term days on hand? So in other words, how many days of operation will your cover?
So basically, the way it works is we have the first 30 days, we have to submit 30 students to show that we have administrative capabilities to be able to process HCM2 records to the Department of Education. Those 30 students would represent roughly $500,000 in cash receipts. Then 30 days later, once that file is approved, we can then submit the remainder of our students that are on Title IV for payments, which would equate to roughly $2 million. So what it looks like is we're about 60 days out.
Okay.
Approximately till April that we'll receive the $2.5 million and then be rolling from there.
So from a cash flow standpoint, do you have the cash to get from now till to that point?
Yes. Yes, we do. As I stated, we have at the end of February 10th, we have $2.5 million in cash. We're continuing to receive MPP payments from students for Aspen University. It equates to roughly $1.4 to $1.5 million on a monthly basis that we receive from these students on an ongoing basis. So, yeah, we continue to have the cash.
Okay. Great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And if you could send that to Mr. LaMountain, you know, he'll share that with us. And I appreciate that.
Will do. Yeah, that wasn't off the top of my head. That would be pretty good.
yeah, it's just it's easier for me to see the numbers, you know, on a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
Are there other questions for folks at Aspen University? Anything else to add, Dr. St. Arnaud? Hearing none, I'll say thank you, and we'll see you. Mr. LaMountain has a question.
Just one question for Michael. Michael, I know that we had a conversation last week. Can you discuss with the board the vendor payments?
Sure.
And what that looks like in terms of your cash flow and are you working with current vendors?
Yes. Yeah. Without going into too much detail and describing what our core vendors are, et cetera, but the overarching plan is we have reached out to our vendors and we have good communication with them and good rapport with them and are working through and the vendors are helping us work through the process of us getting to this first 60 days of repayment. So yeah, we are reaching out to vendors and they're being supportive of our situation.
And then one last question, and I'm sorry to hog the conversation here. One last question is the relationship from Aspen University to Aspen Group. As we talked before, there's some, cash flow in your area in Aspen University, but right. There's still a rather large deficit spending in Aspen Group.
Right.
And I was just wondering if you could talk to the board about that.
Yes.
Because Aspen Group is the overarching entity.
Our company.
And if something were to happen there, it would have an impact on the entire system.
Absolutely. Aspen Group acts for our university as a shared service. All of our services that the university receives administratively are shared services at the parent company. As I discussed in my statements, the parent company is very aware of the cash restrictions and they are analyzing the restructuring of the opportunities that we have within those shared services. So that is occurring and they're aware of the cash restrictions of the overhead that is associated with our parent company. So it's all a team and it's all being done in conjunction with the same efforts.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Bittman. That's all my questions.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And thank you again, Aspen University. Best wishes for a good month and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mitten. Thank you, Mr. LaMountain. Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Has Mr. Romano arrived yet?
I do not see him.
Okay. Well, I think we should have a quorum regardless, assuming that we all vote. And so next up is the Valori Institute of Massage, and this is to discuss and possibly take action on a change of ownership. And representing the institution, Ms. Taylor, and I'm gonna turn over to you, Ms. Cardullo, for this agenda item.
Yes, thank you. Ms. Taylor, are you here today?
Yes, I am. And with me is Jessica DeWeese.
Wonderful. Would either or both of you like to make an opening statement?
Sure. I've been in this industry for 38 years. I started out as a massage therapist and then grew my companies to 9 clinic locations. And I actually owned a school in 2004, but I had an opportunity to grow the company at that time, and I chose to go that direction. So I had it for a year. It was in good standing, and we are very honored to be here. Thank you for your time and your consideration of this.
Okay, thank you. So I've read through your application, and this is for a name change, also a change of ownership. And so can you expand a little bit, explain why your statement on change of ownership, why you want to be the sole proprietor and owner of the massage school?
My reputation has been negatively affected by the actions of the Arizona Massage Therapy Board and the FSMT Board. I don't think they acted ethically, nor do I think they acted in good faith. So it's in my best interest and my company's best interest to be a sole owner and operator of a massage school. So going forward, we will be building a good relationship with those two entities.
Okay. And so the transaction has already taken place with the transfer of ownership?
There's been a transfer of license. So I think I'd like to expand on what this means exactly. So it's only the transfer of the license itself. There are no assets that are coming with it. So there's no students, there's no equipment, there's nothing. So I currently have a training facility in Tucson, which is where the license is. So we did the hands-on training for the students that we enrolled under a grant that we received. So the only thing being transferred is just the license itself.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you. And then you mentioned the training sections. Are you referring to inside of the curriculum when they do their internship or externship hours?
Yes. Was this he's referring to the hands-on portion?
The hands-on part. Like, the whole hands-on part. So we train
the clinical hours, right?
We taught the 395 in-person hours.
Okay. You're still going to be on, Jessica, as well. In what capacity?
So I will be the compliance director and the school director.
Okay. That's great for the transition. And then it looks like you've been licensed initially as Empower. That was in 2019. So the license itself is going to transfer. Only other question I had is, with this change of ownership, is there some sort of a hiring guarantee with your 9 locations that you also own?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you make room for the graduates and you hire
them.
We
do. So we can't guarantee license according to the statutes, right? But yes, I need probably 30 people at every location. So in 2019 also, that's when Cortiva closed down, and there were 23 locations. 3 of them were here in Arizona. So we lost our main provider of massage graduates, students. So, but yes, yeah, we have lots of room to hire.
Okay, well, those were my questions. I wanted to open it up to my colleagues here on the board to see if anyone else has any questions on this change of transfer of license or staff.
Ms. Cardullo, just as a reminder, this is actually considered a change of ownership. So previous, if you recall, Pete Med, who owned and was part of the Empower, we've had occasions to have that group and him in front of our board. And he was utilizing the location and where Ms. Taylor's operation is down in Tucson. So this is, while no money is exchanging, it is a transfer of the license. It is still considered a change of ownership. And then also we have already reviewed the change of name from Empower to Valori. So that is good to go as well. I just wanted to make sure it's clear that it's still considered a change of ownership.
Thank you.
Got it. Okay. Any other points of clarification, questions? Okay. Hearing none, Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to approve the change of ownership application, and assuming that they would maintain a surety bond of $15,000.
Yes.
Did you make the motion, Ms.
Kennedy? I made a motion, and they seem, and you're seconding. Yeah, they seem to agree to the stipulation.
We agree.
Great. All right. We have a motion. We have a second. Roll call. Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano, have you joined? Not in attendance. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace is absent. Ms. Cardullo.
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of four ayes, two not voting, that motion passes.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We are so happy. Thank you.
Great.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you very much. And we now move into the next up is Purpose Institute. Dr. Leck, you are lead on this.
Thank you so much, Dr. Mittman. Would someone from the institution like to make an opening statement before we begin?
Yes, I'm happy to. Thanks so much for having us. Hi, I don't think I met you all last time. My name is Dr. Brennan Sapos. I'm the Director of Operations at Purpose Institute. Our president currently is having a little medical issue, so she wasn't able to give the opening statement, so I'll just briefly explain. Purpose Institute exists to serve underserved student populations in Arizona that are not currently being reached, specifically students coming from low SES backgrounds. We ground ourselves in helping students realize their purpose and genius through our focus on helping our students develop in social entrepreneurship. We believe social entrepreneurs will be able to use this degree to be more competitive in the market, and after completing the degree, have the ability to create transformational change through using business tools to solve community problems and ultimately become nonprofit founders or executive directors in their businesses in our ever-evolving tech-forward and global world. So we're excited to be here with you again today.
Well, great. Thank you very much. Okay, well, I'm going to start off by giving you guys a lot of kudos. Things got a lot better. Your catalog is in pretty good shape, and your website is functioning. So thank you very, very much. I think that's very responsive to what students will need. I do have a few things just to go through, things that I've noticed, and I'm not sometimes I'm just also having to ask board staff questions because in the refund schedule, it has the 100%, 50% type of schedule. Mm-hmm. Kevin, I think this probably is for you. But as a, I'm not quite sure, as an unaccredited school, do they have to use the other one that you guys give or no?
Yeah, I know Keith is going to answer that. He's been working on that with the institution.
Okay, Keith.
Hi, Dr. Leck. How are you?
Hi.
So you are correct. The disconnect from our rule and their how they do it is, and if I'm wrong, doctor, let me know, is a student is pay as you go. So they pay for one class only. They complete that. They pay no more money to the school. So that would be where the 72-hour cancellation notice and all that would come into play. Then they pay the next class, and then they go through complete that class, and then when they're ready, they go to the next class, and they pay for that class. They never pay a lump sum for earned tuition. So it was, I know when they first did this, their initial year, that was, it came up there too. So I don't know how they would fit that payment model into the 90, 80, 70, 60, 50, because they're not really participating in that sort of. Am I right? Is that accurate?
Is that for me?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. So students can take multiple classes at once, but it is like it's pay as you go in the sense of, you know, if you enroll in three classes, you're paying the fee for those three classes. And then, like you're saying, Mr. Blanchard, they would then pay when they're ready for the next one and the next one.
Okay, Dr. Leck, that would require the 90, 80, 70, 60.
Right.
Absolutely. Okay. Yep. So, I'll have them change that. That shouldn't take us too much. Yep. Thank you. Yep.
And then if and when they get DEAC, they can go back to what they had. I just was.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Okay.
Yep. Right. Thank you.
No, thank you. The one of the other policy I found that you guys had that I thought was interesting and potentially really restrictive compared to what I normally see is your transfer policy of only allowing 60 credits. It's pretty low. Like you know, when you and your accreditor will probably have some guidelines on that. But I was just going to let you know that that was relatively low from what I usually see.
Okay.
You also have an accreditation section in your catalog. But you don't have accreditation right now. I don't know how DEAC, you know, if you've gone through any of the process to be able to put anything. But in there, you make a statement that you don't have, you're not registered in any other state. But that's really state approval accreditation and state authorization are very different. And so I think you're going to want to, you know, delineate something and probably potentially say that you don't have, an external accreditor right now, just to be very clear with your students.
Okay. That's good feedback. Thank you.
And then that leads me to my next question, was you have a couple of sections in your catalog that talk about financial aid, but you don't give financial aid. And so, right, because you don't give financial aid because you don't have an accreditation that's approved, correct?
Yes, we do talk about the fact that there are opportunities for tuition waivers as such, but it's not, I guess, financial aid in the way that we would typically think of it.
Yeah, way. I think you want to review that because it sounds exactly like FA because it's talking about, financial aid support, and it even talks about completing the FAFSA, but you don't get financial aid. So the financial aid support, and I would even say you, if and until you get to that point, if and until you get to that point, I would even change the thing from financial aid counseling to maybe financial counseling if they're paying cash. Okay.
Just take the aid out. I get you. It's a key term that doesn't apply here.
Well, it says federal Pell Grants and you're not eligible. So none of that really applies. Kevin?
No, Dr. Leck and Dr. Korb, thank you. That point of clarification, you can utilize the term financial assistance as long as you make it very clear, not financial aid, that you make it very clear that the financial assistance is through whatever private sources that you have. Those can be listed. Certainly nothing, and that would not require any type of FAFSA because that's all federal. So you would need to remove any of that content. And then you would only refer to whatever lending that you have, if you have a private company that's doing it, or if you're doing it internally, you've heard from another school here today that also does internal financing. So however you work with that process is what you would need to do, but all of that would have to be removed from catalog. I don't know that it was on your website, but we'll go back and do another quick review of that.
I do have a question. Do you guys have a recommendation of like a metric to use to determine financial need? If like, I know FAFSA is usually what we use, right? So is there something that's a good replacement?
If I can answer that, just the answer is no. We can't provide advice. That's something that you could reach out to an outside counsel and they can provide information to you.
Thank you.
Okay. Going back to what Kim was talking about, these things will need to be addressed on your website too, because under accreditation, you have the license for state of Arizona and that's authorization, not accreditation. So the other thing, we just, try and let people, I don't know where you guys went. Oh, there you go. We just try and let people, know that when you guys have like, Keith, you want me to stop now?
No, Dr. Leck. I was just wanted Dr. Sasspost. This stuff was all discussed with the other people, Dr. Drakeford, another employee you had. We tried to get this information from you guys for a month. Dr. Leff gave me your notes. We gave everything that was required for these changes. So we're rehashing exactly what Dr. Lex said a month ago at the prior meeting. So that's the frustration from staff. You got the most current stuff that they sent, which still had, and we required a bunch of changes that we did not get. So I just want Dr. Lex to know and the board to know that we tried to get this information changed and it hasn't changed.
I appreciate that. So you got, yeah, you guys are going to have to really, you know, get this last stuff figured out. When you have grievances to, or when you require a specific title of a person to do something and that person isn't able to do that thing for whatever reason, and you don't have an out, that's going to become problematic for you. So we always just try and tell you guys, if you're going to do something, it's got to be a person or designee, so that you don't have a complaint of, you know, or designee had made a decision, but it's not in your policy. And so now your president didn't make the decision, and that's going to end up at the complaint committee. Okay. The financial aid stuff is also on your website. So everything that looks like it's in the catalog is on your website, but your website actually is functioning now. So that's it. And on the enrollment agreement, sometimes when you put things down in multiple places, it doesn't end up getting changed. So you got the tuition in there several times on the enrollment agreement when you click on it, to go fill it out. And I just wanted to probably let you know that, and probably want to have it one time, because if you change it in one and you don't change it in the other, it leads to problems. So just FYI. And that is it for what I've seen in the documents and on the website. But do you have any update on your accreditation efforts since last month?
I will pass that to Dr. Drakeford. Do you have an update you can share on that?
Yes, we've been in constant conversation with DEAC, and they are assisting us with our application as we speak.
Okay. So then, to my point earlier, even because you haven't even applied or anything on that accreditation, I just make it specific that says, you know, your institution does not have external accreditation right now.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Kevin.
Dr. Mittman, Dr. Drakeford, just as a reminder, please review the material in the rules related to your continuous progress that you need to make towards accreditation. So as a reminder, this license is moving from a conditional to a provisional. You'll be on provisional until, if approved today, you would be on provisional until that would go into a regular, which means that you're an accredited institution. So there is a time frame that is spelled out very clearly about what you need to do and how the type of progress that you need to make. And it's critical that you understand that and you review it and you are prepared as we move forward and get ready to get into next year. Substantial progress would need to be made this year to get you to a position next year where you can come back before this board and show that type of progress and have a level of comfort from this board that progress has been made.
Understood. Yes, sir.
Okay, that's the end of my feedback. Do any other board members have anything that they'd like to ask or add?
I have a few questions. Thank you, Dr. Lick. So number one is, according to the application, I don't believe that you have any currently enrolled students. Is that correct? Yeah, I'm seeing a nod.
That's correct, okay. Yeah.
And then on your financial statements, this past calendar year, your fiscal year, you know, your total revenue is $180. Your expenses, you know, exceed that, by, about $7,400. And it doesn't list any. No, I think your payroll, like your total payroll expenses were $2,700. And so, how do you guys operate? Are you volunteers or, mean, how does this work? Because it's been 2 years now, and I mean, you know, I'm just curious as to how you know, how you guys work together on this.
Well, that's a great question. We're a 501c3 nonprofit. Our goal is not to be wealthy. We have a number of very committed faculty who, for example, Dr. Wendy Noble in Arizona, who are committed to our mission because they're passionate about purpose and this technology that we're bringing to students. Paul, I think I agree with you fully. We want to be solvent. We want to be an institution that pays for itself. But we are in our first less than 1 year, and I just pray that you be patient with us, and we promise you we'll get you the numbers that make you feel secure about the direction that we're headed in.
And I just turned my camera off because my internet is unstable. It's not really an issue for me. You don't have to promise me to be, to be financially solvent. The board is concerned, protecting our students is the primary purpose. And so, you know, that's not an issue. And at the same time, you know, given, the work that you've put in, that's really not a concern. I just wonder, like, do all of you volunteer your services? Like you said that your faculty are willing to volunteer, but is that true for you and whoever comprises your staff?
We all have a discounted consulting rate that we work at through vendors, vendor relationship.
So who are the vendors?
So each individual would be the vendor, the contractor.
So you're one, Dr. CC is another. But I don't see like contractual services on your income statement either. So are you charging the institute?
Are you charging the? I don't understand the question.
Yeah, I mean, are you charging? If you're all independent contractors, so you're not salaried employees of Purpose Institute, But are you charging the institute for your services?
So I think it's a combination of in kind and professors who see the long term vision and believe that we'll get there.
Yeah, I'm talking about you guys because you guys are the ones who run the institute, right? Does that make sense?
It does. No one is getting highly paid. We have some small contracts that we do from small services, but no one is getting paid.
Right. So no one's getting paid for the most part at all, right?
That's correct. I think it's good to understand, right? Like, I mean, we were looking at doing an intake of students, I think, back in the fall, and it just kind of didn't quite work out because we didn't have enough students for that intake. And so we do have, like Dr. Drakeford saying, we have faculty members who come to weekly faculty meetings. You know, we kind of have all the pieces in place, but I think everyone's kind of committed to like being on that trajectory where as we get more income coming in, of course we can afford to pay people more, but because this is very much just getting off the ground, people are, you know, doing the work because they believe in it. And that's why that finance piece is coming through at such a smaller amount than I think you would expect.
Okay. And how many students would it take for you to start a new cohort?
I think, what was our minimum amount that we established, Doc?
So for DEAC, they're looking for 5 students. For us to be financially solvent, we need 30 students per semester.
So you say for DEAC, you need 5, but to be, you know, financially solvent, you need 30. Okay.
I think the short-term vision is ideally if we can get that 5 so we can have that proof point and be able to show the data of the fact that students can be successful in the program. That's very much like the first hurdle that we want to get over. And then, of course, the long-term vision is to get to the 30 so that we can comfortably say that we are, as Doc is saying, pay for ourselves.
Okay. Ms. Cardillo?
Yes, thank you. Maybe not to put too fine a point on it, but I understand the difference between faculty and staff, and it completely makes sense to me what they're saying about faculty, because you can do that. We can scale it up to a large university. You know, you hire people like as an adjunct instructor, as you have enough to form a class. And if the class doesn't run, the teacher doesn't get contracted and doesn't get paid. That makes complete sense to me. I see how that will be, how you'll be able to float that. I'm wondering, because the students will have paid tuition, I'm wondering about the administrative staff. How do we know that all of you are not, you're not getting paid by this university or institute? Are you getting, is there any other source? Are you getting grants, or are you getting, do you have some other nonprofit supporting that? Or are you all just sort of agreeing not to get paid? Because my concern would be if any one of you decides to sue the organization and say, here's all the hours I worked and I didn't get paid.
Right. I mean, I'd love, you know, if a couple of other folks want to chime in, either Ron or Dr. Noble, I mean, you can share since you're also in the same boat.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to share. I have a full-time job. I'm a director at a big publishing company. And then, you know, I got connected. Brendan and I have a long history. I was his basically like a superintendent, and he was one of my principals. So we go back like a long time in our career, and he introduced me to Dr. Drakeford. And, you know, the passion for what Purpose Institute is trying to do makes me want to give of my time and to support their efforts. But as far as like my own finances go, like I have a full-time job with a full-time salary. So hopefully that helps.
Yes, thank you.
And I was going to say the same thing. This is Ron Wilson. I'm currently semi-retired, but I actually have more work that I'm doing now than when I wasn't retired. And so as Dr. Drakeford said, I provide many of my consulting services in kind. And do not charge, but also anticipate that at some point in the near future, as Dr. Drakeford mentioned, the institution will be solvent. And at that point, I may seek to submit an application to apply for a position, a salaried position, if available.
Okay.
And last thing, I just put in the chat a link to some of our new technology. Another thing that's attracting some very talented professors like the 5 PhDs we have here. If you look at the link that I put in the chat, it will take the student to Arizona physically, right outside of Phoenix, at Saguaro Lake in Tonto Forest. And we're on the cutting edge of this technology that will allow students from across the country to put on an Oculus and be in Arizona. So this is the vision. If you know anyone else who may be interested in serving as a professor or as a volunteer, please tell them to contact us.
Okay. Yeah. That, well, if I may, you know, I think you've all established that essentially everyone on this call is a volunteer. Right. And so this is not, you know, it's not like you're owed for the work that you've put in, correct? Because that otherwise that would show up, you know, yeah, on your financial statements. And so, okay, I just wanted to know that. The only thing that I would say as a caution is I'm not sure if you are a member of AZ Sarah, but the only way that you could enroll students from other states outside of Arizona, you either have to be licensed in those states, so similar to your private post-secondary education license here, you would have to be licensed in whatever state somebody comes from, or you have to be a member of the state authorization reciprocity agreement. And I don't believe that you are. And so, I'm getting like a double raising of hand of Mr. LaMount.
Yeah, I are going to say the same thing.
Dr. Medman, I didn't mean to hit it twice, so but your voice is important. I don't know. They would not be eligible to be part of Sarah.
Yeah, I didn't think so. So just be careful, because if you do enroll somebody outside of Arizona, it would be a problem.
You can't until you get authorization from the state, the same as you're doing now.
Okay.
Susan?
Well, with the exception that if you don't trigger a physical presence in those states, right, it's you don't have to do business in the state. But every state's different. You have to look up every state and see what the situation is.
Okay.
Yeah, but if you have online students, you still... You guys need to go back and review every state that you intend to have a student. And it's a process and it takes a while. So it's not something that you could have a student one day and think you're going to get approved the next. I think, you know, from this experience. So.
Okay. And Dr. Mittman and Dr. Drakeford, well, I think we've had this conversation in the past as well, which is you really have to understand the compliance piece in all 50 states to know where you need licensure and where it does not trigger licensure. Most of the states, I will tell you, that we've talked about before, do require some type of notification or licensure in that state in order for you to be able to recruit students in Tennessee and have them actually be part of the Arizona institution. So it's very time consuming. It's very expensive, and it requires people that really know what they're doing in compliance to understand that all 50 states. So it is, please, by the time we, if this were to be approved today, by the time we get to next year, that is absolutely over the quarterly process that we'll be talking to you, would be, we need to know where these students are, and we need to know where your licensure is in each of those states that you're going to recruit outside of the state of Arizona. In Arizona, you can recruit students. Outside of that, it is probably, unless you go through that process, you would not be eligible to have those students.
All right. Ms. Cardula?
I don't think, is my hand up? Sorry.
Well,
I mean, hair triggered today for that hand. I'm good.
I was giving you the opportunity if you want to make a motion.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I'm staring right at the screen that says board lead Dr. Leck. And so my apologies, Dr. Leck.
Susan, if you want to. Okay. I would like to make a motion that we approve the conditional to provisional non-accredited degree granting license application with the stipulation that the $26,892 surety bond be maintained, that the corrections that I've outlined be made, and that you ensure that you listen to some of the things that we've talked about for like state enrolling students. that we just went through. Okay.
And it, I would be happy to second your motion, Dr. Lutz.
Thank you.
Great. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call. Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano has joined us. Mr. Romano?
I have been on the majority of the call. I don't have any questions, and I vote aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace is absent. Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of 5 ayes, 1 not voting, that motion passes.
Congratulations.
Thank you all so much. We really appreciate it. And the feedback is really helpful. So thank you so much.
You're most welcome.
Thank you.
All right, moving along. We have a provisional license renewal. And this is Justice College. I am the lead. And so I'm happy to welcome back Dr. Chinchin.
Thank you. Can I make a couple of minutes of comments?
You may indeed. Yeah, that was kind of implicit. I'm sorry. Okay. Go right.
All right.
Do you have an opening remark?
We'll chair Dr. Mittman and the board and Mr. LaMountain, Mr. Blanchard. Thank you so much for having us a part of your meeting today. For everyone, I'm Dr. Palmer Chinchin. I'm the founder and president of Justice College. We're located in Chandler on the Grove's 36-acre campus. We're in our second year of full course offerings at Justice College. We have currently 80 students enrolled, and about half of those live on our campus and campus housing. And this year, you, in 2022, you approved more majors. So we offer 5 programs. They are international business, social justice and global development, educational studies, spiritual formation, and counseling psychology. And the biggest news for us right now is that in October of last year, the TRACS Accreditation Council approved Justice College as candidates for accreditation. I have to show you our certificate. We're very excited about this. It's a big step forward. We are working on our next self-study right now and planning a site visit this summer. And our hope and goal is to, in October, finalize our accreditation with TRACS. Also, because of our approval for candidacy for accreditation, we have been able to file our FAFSA application with the Department of Education. So we're waiting for their answer and working with them on that right now. That candidacy also allowed us, and this isn't really an academic thing, but it allowed us to join the NCCAA, which is an athletic conference for small colleges. And we have 5 sports right now that are very active, women's basketball and men's basketball, women's and men's soccer, and women's volleyball. And for what it's worth, we just finished our first conference play for men's basketball. We went 9-2 and we won the conference. I know this doesn't matter, but winning maybe does a little bit. Last thing I'll say, Dr. Mittman, is one of our emphases at Justice College is that we get our students involved in serving in the community and globally. And so this summer we took a group of our students to Malawi, East Africa. They stayed on our my father, many of you know, founded 3 Christian universities in Africa. And so we stayed on the Malawi campus, on the African Bible College campus. My twin brother, Paul, hosted us there. We even got to play them in basketball while we were there. Unfortunately, I'll just share this is on a personal note. A week after I returned from there, my twin brother passed away suddenly. It's been a hard year, but it's been a really good year for the college as well. So that was all that I was going to open with sharing, Dr. Mittman.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Chinchin, and our condolences to you and your family on the loss of your brother, and congratulations on the candidacy status. And also, I would say, Congratulations on a really good year. You more than doubled, I don't know if you doubled your enrollment, but you doubled your revenue. The institution, you know, certainly seems to be growing. You have a lot of athletics. It looks like you have a bunch of teams. So who knows, you may take over the division that you're in. I guess a couple of things, and maybe we have it, but I don't see it, you know, to have a full set of financials, including the audited financial statements. And if you could, have you already sent them in? If not.
So Dr. Mittman, and our auditor is finishing it now. So we gave you our internal, which your staff accepted.
Okay.
Our fiscal year is January 1st to December 31st. So that audit is almost done. And last year, I think we've met in your April meeting. So I had them and presented. I will be able to provide them to your staff within a week or two.
Okay. Yeah, that works. And also, you know, if next year it's the same timing, you know, maybe just send us your in-house balance sheet and cash flow statements as well, in addition to the income statement that you did share. You have a lot of donations, you know, about half of your, more than half of your revenue comes from donations. And is that through the church? Is that through the school in Africa? Or is this, something that the college has, has taken on in your own, either your own work, or you have a development, you know, an emerging development department?
And so that's a good question. So most of those donations come from church members at the Grove. I think I shared this before, but 20 years ago, I founded the Grove Church in Chandler here. So we have a good population that's also excited about and passionate about the college. I think the donations are higher this year than they will normally be, because we did raise $80,000 to put a wood floor in our gym. Our gym here was carpeted. So 80,000 of that was for the wood floor.
Is that, did you win the championship by beating other teams on a carpeted floor? So you had like
a no, fair court. Yes, we got a wood floor.
Okay.
Yeah.
The only thing that I would say from an advice standpoint, and I know that you and your family have done a lot of impressive work, you know, over decades and across continents and hemispheres. But I would say that you're in a really good position for something in the area of planned gifts, which could make a huge difference, given the fact that you have 20-year relationships with church members who not only, you know, it's not like you're a renter on the church, you know, as the founder of the church, you have, you know, longstanding relationships. And 95% of Americans' assets are not in their bank accounts. And so, you know, the opportunity for the people who, you know, who have worked and respected you or have been with you for a couple of decades, you know, to leave, you know, part of their legacy to the college is substantial. They have at the Arizona Community Foundation, they have presentations on this, and it's something that you can look into. And I'm just saying that because, you know, given the fact that you have already a substantial donor base, this is something, you know, and it's mostly, you know, people leaving the college either in their wills or, you know, they can do other types of planned.
I appreciate
that. We feel like the game changers, for an emerging institution or any institution, actually.
Thank you. I think that's wise. We have not tapped into that at all. I think that's great advice. We will definitely start working on that. So I appreciate that input.
Yeah, for sure. All right. I mean, it's like, it's free advice. And so take it for whatever it's worth. Yeah. Other questions from board members? And I see that Ms. Cardullo has raised her hand.
Yes, thank you. I actually was really impressed with your application and all your materials. I just noticed that with the tracks report, it was dated November of 22, and we last saw you in April of last year. It said that you had met 17 of the 21 points and that you would be required to report back on the other four items by February 15th, which was last week. Did you get that successfully sent in to them? And can you talk about what areas of, were they deficiencies that you needed to correct?
There were four suggestions. So they had given us, you're right, it was a total of 21. There were four suggestions that we were still working on. One had to do with assessment, for example. We did, by the way, we did submit all of those, and staff with TRACS was satisfied with that. They presented to TRACS in their April 15th meeting to the commission. But staff has shared that, in their opinion, they are satisfactory. One had to do with library resources, which we've gained a partnership with a local college here in Chandler, a Baptist college in Chandler. So now we have an agreement with them. So, but we did meet all four of those, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Hearing none, I will call on Dr. Leck to see if you want to make a motion.
It would be you? Dr. Bender, it would be through you.
Okay. Right, I'll make the motion. Dr. Leck, you get first dibs.
Are you trying it? Like, I feel like you're like playing like that, like Freaky Friday, like just mixing everything up today.
Yeah. Oh, that was my mistake. So I'm trying to rectify my mistake. So I'll make the motion. I'll give you first dibs on seconding.
Oh. All
right. And so I am pleased to make the motion to approve the provisional non-degree granting. Hold on a sec. Yeah. Non-accredited degree granting license application with the stipulation that the $15,000 surety bond be maintained. Dr. Chin-Chin, do you agree to that stipulation?
Absolutely. Yeah, we just renewed that.
Okay, good. Can I get a second?
There we go. Second, Dr. Mittman.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, and Mr. LaMountain.
Great, we have a motion and a second. Roll call is Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace is absent. Ms. Cardullo.
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of aye, five ayes, one not voting, this motion passes.
Great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Have a good year. And see you next time.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Mittman. Just to be clear, was that degree granting that you
said? Yes, it's for a non-accredited. It is for your license, so it's non-accredited, which you're not at this
degree point. Granting.
Yeah. Right. It is, yeah.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, board members. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, next up, Superior Coding Academy. And Ms. Cardullo, you are the lead on this.
Yes, back to me. Is Nikki Medina here?
Yes, hello, I'm here.
Welcome back. Would you like to make a statement?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a very small, basically a one-man show. I was a medical coder for many years, and I found that I could get certified as an instructor and I could teach medical coding. And because I like teaching and helping people, I embarked on this journey. being a school owner and business owner has been a learning experience. So I appreciate all the help that you guys have always been giving me ever since I began this journey with you guys. So I just thank you guys for your time and your consideration today.
Thank you, Ms. Medina. And I wanted to open it up to see if any board members had any questions. I know that you had done some reviews of the financials with that committee, possibly.
Mr. LeMountain?
Sure. Dr. Mitt and Ms. Cardullo, Mr. Ball is has worked with Ms. Medina on her financials, which is why he will be recusing himself from this vote. So he's been working through that and reviewed that as a staff level. And I do want to make it clear, Ms. Cardullo found out she was going to be the lead on this about 1 minute before we jumped on the phone call today when I knew that Mr. Wallace was not going to make it. So I can confirm from a staff perspective that we've reviewed all of the materials in the folder that you have, and they are compliant, and we have a high level of confidence that the financials that were presented through Mr. Ball's office also meets those requirements.
And board member Ball, just for the record, this is AG Monahan. Would you please just state for the record that you're recusing yourself again?
Yes, I'm recusing myself and abstaining from any vote.
Thank you.
I was just looking back through my notes because I know you've been before our board before. I don't have any follow-up questions. It looks like everything has been satisfied from your application standpoint. But I wanted to give the other board members an opportunity if they have any questions, with exception of Mr. Ball.
Thank you, Ms. Cardullo. Well, thanks a lot, Ms. Medina, for being here. And I guess, my question for you is this past year, you had, I can't remember if it was more revenue than the year before, but you did have a almost $7,000 loss. And I was just wondering, how are things going since the start of this year? And, what are your plans to move that in a profitable direction?
Yeah, so we did see an increase this year versus the year before, which was very nice. There is a lot of competition in the medical coding training arena. So I've been trying to get creative. I've been consulting with people who specialize in marketing to get help with how to just kind of put our name in school at top of mind when people are looking for a place to choose for their medical coding training. So, more social media presence, maybe some boosted Google ads, different things like that. So it is a continuous effort to try and grow, our enrollments. The other thing too is that we are now on the Arizona State Workforce WIOA ETPL. So that's been really beneficial for us for the last few years of 2022, a few months of 2022. We actually got a good amount of enrollments through the WIOA grant program. So I'm hoping that the partnership there, along with the marketing efforts boosted up, we'll see an even better year this year than we did even last year.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. Best of best wishes for a good rest of your year.
Thank you.
And Dr. Mittman, I'd like to make a motion at this time to approve the conditional to regular non-accredited vocational program license application with the stipulation they maintain the $15,000 surety bond.
I'm happy to second that. And Ms. Medina, do you agree to the stipulation from Ms. Cardullo?
Yes, I agree.
We know what comes next.
All right. Roll call. Great. We have a motion and a second. Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Abstain.
Mr. Ball abstains. Mr. Wallace absent. Ms. Cardullo.
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. So your vote of 4 ayes, 1 abstention, and 1 absent, that motion passes.
And just for the record, Kevin, that would be 1 recusal, not 1 abstention. Yep. Thank you.
One recusal, I apologize.
No problem. I'm awake. Hey, I'm here.
I know you. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you guys so much. I was so nervous, so that I'm so happy to hear that.
You did great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Great. And so did you, Ms. Cardullo, on a moment's notice. Thank you very much. Okay, next up is Inspection Career Training Academy, and Mr. Romano is the board lead. Take it away.
All right, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Do we have someone representing the school today that would like to make an opening statement?
Yeah, this is Dylan Winicky. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, Mr. Winicky. Please go ahead.
All right. Thank you so much for having me today. Learned so much. We opened up last January. We're able to help 25 students for in-class, in-person training in our classroom. And then we're able to also help 28 students out in the field do their field required training that the state requires of them to get licensed as home inspectors in Arizona. So really, really happy, learned a ton, still learning a ton about the actual running of a school. And there is another school owner locally here that I've made friends with. I actually went through his school when I became a home inspector. So that's been helpful. He has suggested that I get involved with the Board of Technical Registration and start following them along to learn from them and what's going on with standards and changes and laws and things like that. So I've gotten involved and attended those meetings, and I'm just learning a ton. So other than that, we have students passing their exams and becoming licensed and getting jobs. So that's we're doing what we intended to do.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I have a few questions. One, and I often ask this just because of the way the market has been in Arizona and the changes there, like what you might be seeing in regards to home inspection increases or decreases. When we had talked with some others, we knew that people were obviously buying homes and waiving inspections and what that looks like. Are you still experiencing that? Are you seeing an uptick in home inspections in the market? What does that look like for the students?
Yeah, absolutely. In October of last year, so I actually own a home inspection company as well. I have 7 inspectors that work for me, and it was tough. It was tough from about October to December. And then 1st of January. And in our past, we have not seen that. Usually the winter is a great time to buy a home in Arizona. People are, snowbirds are coming here, and there's a lot going on. The weather's great. So, there's usually a lot more going on. So we were a little bit concerned. We're kind of keeping an eye on it. And, again, speaking with some people that we know that mentor us that have been around for more 17 to 20 year range, where they've seen a lot more variations and 2008s and things like that. We're a little bit more of a new company. So what we were told was just to hang in there, and, you know, usually stuff kind of comes right back around, and it just depends. But there's a lot of factors. What happened in the second week of January was basically we got busier than we've ever been, and we've sustained that for since the second week of January. So the inspectors are happy, and I'm happy to report to the students that, you know, the industry, it does ride a wave, a little bit of a roller coaster. However, everything we've seen in the industry, and this is even across the U.S., there's a lot of podcasts, there's a lot of information out there on the industry. For home inspectors specifically, the business doesn't take quite as much of a dip or hit as actual a realtor or the real estate industry as a whole. There's other ways we can, there's other services we can perform. There's other ways we can make money and do inspections other than just a real estate transaction. So new build communities, there's still a lot of people building and buying new homes. There's other ancillary services like mold inspections and things like that. We can provide sewer camera inspections. And then some people just hire us for home maintenance inspections. And then you can even get into commercial building inspections. So there's really a lot of things you can get into. A lot of these ancillary inspections I'm referring to are actually classes that we would like to start adding at our school. And that was something I had called and asked Mr. LaMountain about, as far as, you know, making sure that we're notifying you guys properly of what we're adding, and maybe suggested pricing and things like that. So we kind of have discussed some things with him and other members, trying to make sure we're doing things properly and notifying you guys of any changes we're making.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you for staying in contact with us. And I want to commend you as well in reaching out to other schools that are servicing similar type of products as you are to stay close to that. So thank you for your attentiveness to that. I did have a chance to review your materials. I only had a couple things that I'd like to highlight for you more than anything else at this point. Obviously, being a new school, we're always a little cautious about statements that are made on websites and in other materials. And as I went through your website, not trying to do a wholesale inspection on it or anything like that, but I do want to at least call out a couple of things. It seemed like there were a number of areas that we call maybe some marketing puffery that might be difficult to substantiate. So, for example, there were a couple places that talked about best in-person training offered in the state. So when you make absolute statements like that, how are you substantiating that? So certainly we understand you take immense pride in the education that you're providing, but where we try and see it is from the lens of a student or a consumer that might come back and say, they said they were the best, but this place seems to be better, in my opinion. How did they get to the best? And that's why I went to school, and then they have a complaint. So we ask that always schools try and have some sensitivity to that. There's a couple other areas where you talk about passing the NHIE and almost guaranteeing that. And I would just caution, again, when consumers are making decisions, they're thinking, well, by going to your classes, if I show up and get a passing grade, I'm guaranteed to pass that test, and that may not necessarily be a factual statement. You call out career-long coaching and mentoring, and so, you know, I think we can all appreciate the intent around a statement like that. But if things change, or for some reason you decide to discontinue this school for whatever reason, the student is then looking for, you know, hey, you said career long mentoring. I'm still in the career, even though you're not around. So it creates those types of confusing messages. A couple other places where you have best program. And then you also call out a statement at the bottom of your main webpage, which actually says, based on your research, online courses have an 80% plus failure rate, but you don't call out what you're referencing, like where that number came from. And so that can also create potential misrepresentation as well. So, you know, all this to say, as you scrub your website and how you market this, understanding the pride you're taking in the education that you're providing, those types of things can end up in students filing a complaint, and then you're kind of left to the mercy, as we'll talk through it, around maybe how you did mislead or were not able to substantiate some of the claims that you made. Okay?
Thank you so much. Yeah, I will have my lawyer and I'll sit down with my lawyer and go through those things. I wrote down the ones that you said, and I'll just have him do an audit as well to see if there's anything else he feels we're opening ourselves up to. Is that what you would suggest? Does it sound like a good idea?
Yeah, I think for a new school, we always encourage that. So, you know, just take a look at anything that could be misunderstood by a consumer. And we understand your passion and the pride you take in regards to the quality of product that you put forward to students. We're not questioning that. It's just how that may evolve over time. And we try and get ahead of it with new schools to help them be successful. Okay.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Right. Yeah, absolutely. I really appreciate the feedback. Thank you.
I do want to throw out a major prop to you, though, in your catalog for actually referencing a TV show, Married at First Sight. I think that's the first time I've ever seen in a school catalog a reference to a TV show. So impressive on that. And I just wanted to share that with you. So you can at least have confidence we do actually review these materials in detail and that I did pick up and notice on. So I appreciate that. All that aside, you know, things look to be in pretty good order from your application. I didn't notice anything else. My other fellow board members may have picked up on a couple other things that they'd like to maybe bring forward at this time. So I will turn it over to them to see if there's anything additional. All right. Well, hearing none, I would like to then make a motion to approve the conditional to regular non-accredited vocational program license application for Inspection Career Training Academy with the stipulation that the $15,000 surety bond is maintained.
And this is Susan Cardullo. I'll second the motion.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Mr. Winicky, do you agree to maintaining that surety bond of $15,000?
Yes, I have, and I do.
Very good. Mr. Lamont, would you take roll?
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace is absent. Ms. Cardullo.
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of 5 ayes, 1 absent, that motion passes.
Congratulations.
Thank you all for having me today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much for your time as well. Have a great rest of your day.
Great. We have a new application, the Ideal Institute, and our lead is Mr. Ball.
And I believe we have a representative of Ideal Institute, Mr. Pete Toon. Are you there, sir?
I saw him join. Mr. Toon?
Mr. Toon, are you here?
He is here. I'm looking at him. This is Clay Abernathy, one of the founders.
He is on mute.
Yeah, he shows he's on mute.
He's muted there. Give me one second.
Sure.
There you go.
Oh, wrong mute. I was clicking on my window. Sorry about that.
Good afternoon, sir.
Yes, I am here, and I enthusiastically would love to give an opening statement.
Please do so.
We really appreciate the opportunity to be here. We first didn't think we'd be able to be here until March, and so we're really appreciative of you guys putting us on the schedule today, 100%. And we just wanted to summarize a little bit about what Ideal Institute is and who we are and what we do. And just as an introduction, we are really more than a learning center. We offer real solutions to give everyone more options and direction to their lives at zero cost to them. We are a hands-on perceptual learning trade school. Our students learn by doing. We offer a 6-month general construction course, building tiny modular homes, teaching all aspects of home construction. We motivate and build confidence for those who do not succeed in traditional college and university settings. We create opportunities and change lives. Students are debt-free on graduation. We sell the homes that they build during the school to pay for the school. In our nation and worldwide, there's a dramatic shortage of construction workers. And Ideal is the only solution that we've seen where we'll be able to, through our growth, be able to train enough construction workers to address that shortage. And recognizing that construction, it impacts every one of us, both at work and at home. We need places to work and places to live. We are a licensed factory-built builder in the state of Arizona, and we create and fill needed jobs. So we hope you you will consider our application as we change lives and strive to teach people how to make a living on their own. And thank you again for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you, sir. Question, just out of curiosity, what happens if the house doesn't sell?
Well, we haven't had that problem yet, but if the homes don't sell, then yeah, that falls back on us, not the students.
Not the student, okay.
No.
I just have a question on the financials you submitted. To me, it looks like your assets are overstated and your net income is overstated because you're not recording depreciation. Do you have any idea why that would be?
Well, we haven't. What we submitted for 2022 hasn't gone through our accountant yet for depreciation aspects, but yeah, we are pretty new and we haven't added that in yet.
Okay, so all these assets that you have on your balance sheet, like modular kitchen, modular master bed bath, like the modular kitchen is on your books at $475,000. Did you actually go out and buy this modular kitchen? And
no, we bought the materials and we built those. Our students built those, all of those. And so those are in our inventory and they're in the process of actually being sold and delivered.
Okay. All right. And you don't have a website yet, right?
We do have a website, but we were instructed to take it down.
And why was that, you know?
Because we didn't have this license yet.
I'm going to open it up to any other board members who have questions.
Yeah, I have a couple, if I could. Sure. I'm trying to appreciate this. I really like what you're doing. I guess what I'm kind of taking is student comes in, enrolls, goes through your program, but is actually working, through learning through on the job training almost. Is that how I understand it? And then based on the home being sold, the student is, no longer carries debt of tuition, or can you expound on that a little bit more?
So our primary goal with Ideal Institute is training new construction workers. And so as we go through and design our curriculum, that's our primary focus. And Clay and I feel really strongly about the problem that we have with student debt in this country. And so we tried to figure out a way that we could make this work and have our students graduate debt-free. And so this is what we came up with was, you know, we build these modular homes and sell them. And then, the students can graduate without any debt and then they can actually go out and not have that hanging over them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So if I'm a student and I'm, how many homes would I build during my program?
3 to 4 homes. You would each class will build about 20 homes, okay. and each student will participate in all of those homes.
Okay. And so, and to the earlier point, if the homes don't sell, even though you haven't gotten to that point, student still obligated to their 14,000 tuition or?
Nope. As long as they complete the course and we waive the tuition, there's nothing on them.
Okay. And then that gets me to my other piece as well, because I could see this being very attractive for people who might want to kick the tires getting into the construction industry. Sure. They start the program, they stop the program. Obligation of tuition based on refund is easily understood. How do you go about educating the student in that process of their true obligation, knowing that they may not they may find out that construction isn't for them, I guess.
You know, it's a 6-month program. You know, we think anybody can do anything for 6 months. And, it's not been a hard sell for everybody, and they commit to it and they complete it. And it does give them some skin in the game, and it does motivate them to complete it, but it hasn't been terrible for them, you know. And I think everybody that, I don't know, Clay or Nelson, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think there's been any students that have, well, there's been a couple that have said, yeah, maybe this isn't for me, but they finished the program.
And part of that is that we do educate them that tuition will be due if they do leave the program or if they fail out of the program. So at the beginning of them going in, by admissions directors, we explain that to the contract, that if they do leave or do fail out, that that loan that we gave them essentially would need to be paid back. So I mean, we do educate them at the beginning of that. The nice part is that we don't have a fallout rate because it is such a short period of time, and they get their tools and keep their tools at the end of it too, that have been progressed to them.
Thank you for that. One other question of clarity too. While they're in school building these homes that will be sold on the market that free them of their obligation of tuition, they are not paid a rate while they construct these homes. So essentially that's free labor to build the homes, I guess. Well, not free, because obviously you have costs to incur for the tuition, but you're not paying the students a rate while they perform these activities?
Correct. We do not pay the students. We pay the staff to train the students and teach the students. That's where the expense comes in. And then we have all the expense of the materials and the tools.
Okay. That's helpful. And I appreciate that. And, you know, just caution as you get acclimated to the school side. Certainly some of the activities you're talking about here are acceptable practices. I would also encourage you, you know, with your legal team to review, as well as there have been some class action suits across the country to schools that essentially charge a tuition, get free labor, and then sell services and products out in the marketplace at a premium. So just something to consider. It sounds like you're approaching this from a very altruistic path and not questioning that at all. Just want you to be aware that students may take action based on how you're packaging that, and just encourage you to be aware of that as you continue to move forward. But that doesn't hold you up in this process at all, just sharing a little of our board experience and other experiences with working with schools for your awareness. Okay.
We appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah.
I believe Susan had a question.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Ball. I also think this is a fascinating model, and I really want to congratulate you guys on thinking of this. But my questions are about thinking about when a student does not complete, I'm not saying they quit school, but if they, it says if they fail a skill, they have an opportunity to make it up. Is this on, is their account then charged for the repeating of that section?
No.
Or it stays a flat 14,000? Okay.
Yeah.
But then there are a number of credits attempted. I mean, I guess it's not credits, it's clock hours. I'm just wondering if there's any type of a maximum time frame for completion. If someone isn't quitting on you, but they just are not achieving these skills, they just get to keep trying and trying and trying, and this could go on for longer than 6 months. Can it go on longer than 9 months, which is a time and a half?
Well, we haven't had that issue. People generally will get it. We have a pretty significant, we've have a videographer, and we've been videoing every day since we started. And, so we have a pretty good, catalog of videos, of how to videos. And so we're able to tap into that knowledge base and just, you know, they can look up the videos and just see, oh, this is what I'm doing wrong. So it's really it would be pretty unusual for someone to not get it within a while.
Okay. Thank you. And then my other question is, what if they, it says the requirement for enrollment is physical. You have to be able to lift 50 pounds. You have to be able to be on your feet for 8 hours a day. What if something happens in that 6 months that makes them no longer able to lift 50 pounds, no longer able to be on their feet 8 hours a day, no choice of their own? What do you do in that situation?
You know, it's every situation is going to be different. We'll just sit down and figure out a plan for them going forward. You know, if somebody breaks a leg, they can't lift for, you know, 2 months, then we'll see what they want to do and how they want to handle it and then make sure it works for everybody.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Abernathy, do you have a question?
Oh, no, I was a follow-up statement on what we were talking about, but it was covered already.
Okay.
I have a question, Mr. Ball. That's all right.
Go ahead.
So of the 870 hours, right, it's 870 clock hours over a 6 month period, right? How much of that is like classroom or video instruction versus hands-on slash, you know, working?
I'll defer to Nelson. He wrote the curriculum.
Hey, go ahead. You raised your hand to answer.
Oh, no, I don't know how to unraise my hand, but I can answer it. we're real good at the technology thing. The answer to the question is it's about 30 minutes to 1 hour per 8 hours. So if you were, you know, depending on what we have based on the day, we spend about a half hour in the morning and a half hour at the end of class to review and understand the kind of skills that are being gained at Ideal are muscle memory, also in the act of doing it and learning. So I would say 90% of the time is out building and learning on those builds. And that's what perceptual learning is about, is the environment teaching, not a teacher standing over teaching.
Okay. So of the 870 hours, roughly 800 or 750 is spent in the fields doing, working, et cetera.
That'd be about right.
Yeah. So kind of following up on the questions previously asked, you know, a student enrolls, they sign an enrollment agreement, $14,500, and they essentially are, I'll just be blunt, you know, they're the equivalent of a half-time employee. Well, maybe the equivalent of a full-time employee in terms of the number of hours that they put in. They're not compensated. They are learning. However, if they don't finish the program, they don't, you know, they're on the hook for $14,500. And I guess it troubles me in that it feels like, you know, they're kind of like employees, but they're unpaid. They are getting the benefit of the education, but if they don't complete it, then they owe the money. Do they receive at the end of it? Do they receive it's a vocational, is it a certificate or a degree? What do they get at the conclusion?
First off, most of the people who start the program have zero construction skills, so we would never hire them to do that. But to answer your question, what they get at the end, everybody gets a certificate of completion, and then about half of our students will go ahead and take a test for their R62 license with the State of Arizona Registrar of Contractors, and they've all passed so far. And that, what that does is that enables them to go out and start their own business They can do improvements, repairs, maintenance, up to $5,000 per job. And then in addition to that, we have a long list of contractors who want to hire our graduates. So those three things are pretty enticing for all the students, and it's worked out very well.
Okay. And the students that you've had, was that, I don't know, Mr. LeMountain, somebody asked the Institute to take down the school's website. I mean, the tiny, the Ideal Tinies is still up there. That's the business part. I get that. Was the 13 students who've completed the program, was that, you know, where was that timing-wise in relation to licensure application?
Sure. Dr. Mittman, the institution was operating prior to licensure. We received information that the institution was operating down in Tucson. Mr. Blanchard reached out to the institution and started to do conduct some research. We did present them with, I believe, a cease and desist order. Mr. Blanchard, I think that we did that shortly after we received that information. Then we became involved in conversations with Mr. Toon and others and Mr. Abernathy regarding the requirement for licensure based upon what we viewed this particular the curriculum, it would require licensure. And then we have worked with the institution since. So the answer to the question is, yes, they were operating without a license prior to this process that they're going through now.
Okay. If I could just say, we self-reported. So that's how this all, that's how we ended up here today. Okay. We talked to Fred Lockhart. I don't know if all know him. We talked to Fred and he said, hey, I think you might need to be. And so we self-reported. So I just wanted
to be clear. Yeah. And I mean, you're not the first school that started from scratch and found themselves in this situation. Can I ask, I'd like to ask our assistant AG a question. Can we go into executive session briefly? Do I need to make a motion for that?
Yeah, for legal advice.
Okay. I'll make a motion to go into executive session.
All right. It's going to take 1 minute to set up a room.
Okay.
Well, he still has to get a second for that.
I thought I heard a second. Do we have a second?
I'll go ahead and second that. And for the schools, just for your knowledge, we do this because we just have questions that we don't necessarily want to discuss in open space. And so please don't read anything into that.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, we have a motion and a second.
You could just do a voice vote.
Okay.
Aye. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Give me a couple minutes, or about a minute. I'm working on this, getting this as quick as I can. Okay. All right, I'm going to open the room.
Where'd you go? Did you go in the room?
Somehow I ended up in the room.
Well, you're doing good because they kicked me out of the room.
Same.
I'm trying to get back in.
I think the rooms were set up kind of a little bit
weird. So I just sent Kevin a message.
Great. We'll get to this. Don't worry. You're our last school, so we'll certainly keep you moving through.
It's definitely earlier than 4 o'clock, so I think everybody's going to be happy.
It's a win.
Pete, I gave you the worst case scenarios all the time.
So it's good to be prepared for worst case. It's been interesting watching all the different schools.
Yeah, it can be very educational, that's for sure. And that's why we encourage it.
Yeah.
Very much so.
This is Jill D'Atley, and I strongly recommend that you either listen live or go back and listen to the recordings. I'm a frequent flyer. I listen in on almost every meeting if possible, because I think it's helpful to hear what's going on with other schools. And also, I'm waiting for Kevin's report, which is supposed to be at the beginning. That hasn't happened yet. I didn't hear him give the executive director report. And I always listen in for that as well. He typically does do it at the beginning, so that if you're not on the agenda, you don't have to stay on for the whole thing. But I've enjoyed hearing about your institution as well.
Thank you. It's a lot of work, but a lot of fun and very rewarding.
Yeah, I've been doing this a really long time in regulatory, so always something.
Do you have a school?
Yeah, I work for with American Intercontinental University System, we're based in Chandler. We're predominantly online, 50-plus-year-old institution, and I work in the corporate group. And we've been licensed with Arizona for about 6 years now. We relocated from Illinois. So we were previously regulated in Illinois, we've worked with the board with other institutions for a really long time, but have worked with this team for, I think, 6 years.
I think the meeting next month is just a board meeting, and we probably can't attend that one.
They're all open.
Oh, they are.
They're all open because they're a government agency. Everything is open to the public. So they always list them on. There's like subcommittees. I don't know if they webcast the complaint and finance committee, but all the board meetings, like this one, which the next one is April 27th, it looks like they're always. They used to be in person and webcast, and now they're just webcast because they're virtual. Once you get to full license, you don't have to go before the board every time. Mm. Once you work through all the processes, then you're done a desk review with staff, and so you don't have to appear. You appear if there's like a request to add a bond requirement or letter, you know, that kind of thing, or if you want a modification to that, or if you're making, you know, substantive changes, or if there's something going on that there's lots of questions.
Yeah.
So the goal is to not ever have to be on the agenda.
Except for this first one, we wanted
to
be.
Except for getting on, right. Once you get added in and we obviously went through those steps, and we were already accredited when we came in, so we were able to go. We went from, I think, provisional to a full license.
We're back, and I am going to turn this back over to Mr. Ball.
Dr. Mettner, can you say something so I can?
Yeah.
Okay, it is working.
Hey, I think we're waiting for Mr. Ball as the board lead to resume here. I'm just probably waiting for him to get back in.
Yeah, it looked like he may have dropped the call. He may need to get back into the call.
Okay.
I think he didn't know to hit that button at the top because I didn't till a second to last out because I was like, oh, I have to do something.
Here he is.
Mr. Ball, you are on mute.
Oh, sorry about that. Any other questions, maybe, of members of the board?
Nope, not here.
I do have a couple other that I'd just like to try and get some clarity around. And I'm curious, I don't know the answer to this, to the school. Is there any review, like any other authority that reviews your curriculum and the grading policies associated with your curriculum?
No.
Okay.
I think there is more than that. I mean, we do have teachers that are volunteer that come in from the industry. So we have registered plumbers, registered contractors. I myself am a registered KB1 contractor, which allows me to build skyscrapers. We are associated with the IBC and the IRC codes. So they have to build according to the international codes. Those specialty teachers that come in are reviewing the curriculum and the builds. We also have third-party inspectors that come in. We have the State of Manufacturing Board that come in to make sure that we are building to the IRC standards. So we do have a lot of review of our curriculum, but it's not what you would consider your traditional review. It is specialty people that come in and review the students' builds and critique their builds and make sure that we are teaching the codes of construction. And that's probably the best way that we found to be able to show that they're learning.
Thank you for that. I certainly don't want to start to broach into the evaluation of that, but I will at least share that this is a new type of approach, but it is similar to other approaches of other institutions. Sometimes the biggest complaint that comes from a student is when they are dismissed from a class or they fail a class where they feel like they should not have failed the class. And because of inconsistencies in a grading policy of pass and fail, that's where a lot of consumer complaints can come from. So I just share that with you outside of where we're at right now from a standpoint of being very consistent of your evaluation, passing and failing of students, dismissal of students will be very critical in, you know, moving forward, especially if students were to come with the with a complaint against the institution to the state board, we would be looking and for the school to be able to explain in detail how consistent they are with their review of pass and fail criteria to make sure students are being dealt with in a fair and equitable way. And I'll leave it at that.
Thank you for that.
I have one other question. On your financial statements, you've got $891,000 in accounts receivables on sales of $982,000. And so what accounts for the, why are the receivables as high as they are and what do they account for?
Well, during the past year, we constructed about $2.6 million in inventory and we took an order for a big chunk of that in December, and so those numbers are both tied to that. So $101.4 million worth of our inventory.
Okay. So it has already been sold. You're just waiting for the sale to finalize or for the payment to be made?
Yeah, it's, you know, it takes a little bit of time to deliver and install 40 units.
Oh, okay.
So it's about a probably four month process.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Sorry, one last question. If and you may have this somewhere in your documentation, and I may have just overlooked it, so I apologize. In your projections for first year, what would you anticipate the number of students going through the program to be?
We're currently set up at this campus to do 60 students every 6 months, so 120 students.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Leck, question?
Yeah, I do. I was looking, so I see some statements in here that says if you withdraw, you have to pay the $14,000 or graduate, the $14,000 will be forgiven. But at the same time, we have the refund policy. So those, aren't those kind of not working together then? Because if they, depending on when they withdraw, they won't pay the $14,000.
That is correct. And I believe it's a certain percentage based upon the week and the month. And that is correct.
Are you referring to under our program costs, it says tuition is due upon withdrawal or completion of the program?
Yes.
Yeah, we could remove the
completion of the program. Yes, it should say according to the refund policy.
Yes.
Yes.
We can fix that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Lamont, this is a technical question for the board or for the staff. In regards to the strife for students, is that if something were to occur where for whatever reason students would want to access that really only for tuition they've paid out, not for tuition they actually owe? Is that correct?
Correct, Mr. Romano. It would be for dollars that were paid. That would be part of a request that we would make for their ledger card that would show any dollar that they paid through any program, whether it be a credit card, check, another additional finance, internal financing, however that worked, they would be eligible to recover that. But outside of that, they would not.
It's for the institution, from what I'm reading in your enrollment agreement, the students do not have to make any tuition payment while they're in school. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. All right. Is there any reason you would change that policy or in your enrollment agreement?
No, not at this point.
Okay. If you were to, I would ask that you notify the board staff of a change of that nature. The reason I'm bringing that up is here's my sensitivity. Right now, this is a unique program. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's always good to try and look at things in a different way. But it is also plausible that this could go south. And students who've made payments into the school for tuition may come back with a strife claim. If the school goes out of business and they've made payments or feel like they were misled or something to that effect, that ultimately lead to the surety bonds that we put into place for that piece of it. So right now, what you're saying is a student coming in and enrolling doesn't pay any tuition while they're going through the program. So at least from that standpoint, we have some confidence that a student wouldn't necessarily be coming back to the state to make that type of a claim, which is part of our responsibility as a board as well. Right. But if you were to change that suddenly and students were paying a tuition while they were in school, that is why we would want to be informed of that timely to determine if other actions need to take place.
Sure. We can absolutely do that. We've had zero conversations about doing anything like that. It's totally against what we've set up here. So I don't see that happening.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions from the board members? Hearing none, I'd like to make a motion that the board approve the conditional non-accredited vocational program license application of Ideal Institute with stipulation that the $15,000 surety bond be maintained.
I'll second that, Mr. Ball. And could you also add the stipulation that the school just agreed to remove the refund, not the refund, but that a student who leaves would have to pay the full amount so that anything beyond the refund policy, in other words.
Yeah, it's the program cost section. They'll revise the program cost section of their catalog.
Okay. Let me first ask Mr. Toon if he agrees to the $15,000 stipulation on the surety bond.
Absolutely. We have it in place already.
And then I'll amend my motion to somebody help me out here.
Revise the program cost section of their catalog to take out any reference of payment outside of the refund policy.
Okay.
That
I
thing.
I add that motion. Motion.
Okay. And I'll second.
Second.
All right.
We have a motion and a second. A roll call. Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace is absent. Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of 5 ayes, 1 absent, that motion passes.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. And Dr. Mittman, we can go back up to that.
The review and discussion. Yes, please do. So can we get a motion to accept the board minutes for the January 26, 2023 meeting?
So motion.
Rock, paper, scissors.
All right.
You can have first. I'll take second.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Dr. Mittman.
Abstain.
Dr. Mittman abstains. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace is absent. Ms. Cardullo.
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of 4 ayes, 1 abstain, that motion passes.
Great. Next up, the executive director's report.
You know, I know we're running short on time, so I do have the report in there if you want to review it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me. Financially, you can see that we're in a much better spot and things are continuing to improve there. So any other questions, feel free to do that.
Sounds good. All right. Call to the public. Is there anyone out there who would like to speak?
Dr. Mittman, I don't see any hands raised.
Okay. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.
Great.
Second.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Good night,
everyone.
Good
night.
Thanks, bye.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Take care.